You're listening to Midwest Digest. This week on the episode, we interview artist Wade Hampton. He loves making art in many forms. He's been a painter, illustrator, graphic designer, cartoonist, musician, writer, director, and filmmaker. I want to give a quick shout out and thank you to the sponsors of this week's episode, Hellbomb Tattoo and College Hill Deli and Catering. This week, going on in Wichita, you got comedy at the Looney Bin Comedy Club, March 9th. This Wednesday, 8 p.m., it's the We Gotta Get Out of This Place comedy show and live DVD recording featuring comedians Megan Welch, Dan the Man, and Daniel Purity. Also, got a house show at the Palisade House featuring bands Twin Cities, Team Tremelo, Bruise, and Steph. This Thursday, 8 p.m., that's an all-ages show. This Friday, you got Budget Burlesque Comedy Series. That's burlesque and stand-up comedy combined at the Elbow Room. Then you have Half Grass, March 12th. That's a bluegrass festival all day long at the Abode. It's $20 to get in. Then you have Blues and Barbecue at Crown Uptown, March 19th. That's a benefit for Boy Scouts of America. March 25th, at the Hopping Gnome Brewery, you have stand-up comedy show, five comics featuring two of our own from the podcast, Jessica Kay and Tim Maggard. That's a free event starting at 8 p.m. Let's get into the interview.
Mess it up again just for fun. We're here with Wade Hampton
in his beautiful home.
Yes, amazing.
So kindly let us
I'm a big fan of people coming to my house. I mean, not going places.
Let's go around the table and get like a voice recognition from everyone. You got
Bernardo Treviso,
yeah,
Junior.
Patrick Cavillo,
both expert navigators.
Mm-hmm. Gray Brand, never been heard on Midwest Digest.
There she is.
First time.
Historic.
Here I am.
Welcome,
Gray. James McBride.
There you go.
Yeah.
Unofficial guest.
Unofficial?
Yeah.
He's been on a couple.
Yeah.
Not good ones.
I think you might have just insulted him. That's fine.
That's
our rapport.
He's a friend of Midwest Digest.
That's our thing.
So wait, we're here in your home. It's amazing. This makeshift table. That's actually just a table.
It's a real table.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not supposed to touch the table.
Don't touch the table.
So you're an artist or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
Looks good.
Most of this on the walls is Wichita artists. So, yeah. I found out a long time ago that you don't buy art, you trade art. So, yeah.
Nice.
Like Pokemon cards.
Exactly.
But,
yeah.
But more valuable.
But maybe. Bigger.
But theoretically more valuable.
Well, I don't know about that, but we hope someday, maybe.
That Charizard is worth a lot.
Second edition, holographic?
No, first edition.
Oh, I never got one of those. So you, Bernardo, I think, was got us in contact with you. So how did you run into each other? What's the link there?
Bluebird Art House is how I know you exist.
Yeah.
Because seeing that online, I don't think I ever met you there.
No, we officially met at... what's it called? That gallery? I forgot what it was called.
Wasn't Harvester upstairs? Was
no,
it?
No. Lindsay introduced us at what's it called?
The Guggenheim.
No.
The MoMA?
Yeah, the MoMA. Yeah.
Was it Diver?
It could be.
It's Diver.
Yeah.
Is that the one with the upstairs?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Diver,
yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
Were those art jokes, what you just did?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
You wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
Some of your audience is really going to laugh.
Is that like...
You should get that one.
Is that like if we were...
I
like
how much judging
if two musicians were like, where do we meet? And one of them was like, you know, Carnegie. Would it be like that?
They're going to be pissed. I didn't know what Diver was.
Yeah. how'd you screw that up? So, Wade, how long have you been doing art?
Well, you know, like most artists, I guess your whole life, but... I don't know what age that you decide that you're going to actually keep doing it. You know, everybody starts out making art, but the trick is to keep doing it. So, yeah, my whole life. I wish I had a better answer than that.
No, it's a great answer. I wish I could say I was doing something my whole life. Something like breathing and being stupid.
Are you from Wichita?
I am. Well, I'm from... I technically was born in Wichita, but I grew up... I always have to give a plug for Clonmel, Kansas, because I grew up in a country on a farm outside of Clonmel, population 3.
Yeah.
True story. But I went all 12 years of school to Clearwater.
Okay.
So, yeah, in the region. When I graduated Clearwater, I moved here to go to Wichita State and stayed up here.
Nice. What year did you graduate Clearwater?
85.
1985. How was the art scene in Wichita in 85?
You know, that's a good question because I have no idea. When I went to Wichita State, I call 18 to 25 my lost years because I had no clue what I wanted to do. I was told that I could possibly pursue my saxophone at Wichita State and possibly get a scholarship, but it would probably be in the jazz program, which I had no interest in. I like jazz, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't some big passion because I played jazz in high school and stuff. Reason I'm getting to that is I didn't know what I was going to do, but I always had made art. And so I remember going to the counselor, and he's like, "So what are you going to major in?" And I was like, had no idea. I mean, clueless. So he started asking me questions. You know, what do you want to do? What are you interested in? And I just remember, I didn't even know what graphic design was. I even heard the term, or commercial art. And I said, "I don't know. Somebody makes posters, don't they?" He goes, "You mean like graphic designers?" And I go, "What's that?" And he told me. And he said, "You could go into graphic design." And I was like, "Okay." So I went into graphic design.
At WSU.
And it was many years in.
Just because it sounded good.
Yeah. I thought, I don't know. I like
what
illustration and stuff. And it was all kind of under that banner, you know?
Like what kind of posters were you talking about? Like show posters?
Yeah, anything. Rock posters, anything. Right. Movie posters, probably, that somebody who designed those had to be designers.
Yeah.
You know, it was a loose term to just say graphic design was going to cover what I wanted. And I think I got brush graded. And I never graduated, by the way. And so I got offered a job doing art. So I dropped out my junior year, did that. But I was still frustrated that I wasn't being an artist. And I had a friend kind of in the same boat say, "Hey, we should take a painting class." And we took a painting class from Brian Hinkle, which I think he was a grad student at the time. And that's kind of what got it going because he was such a great teacher because at one point, about halfway through the class, he kind of just started saying, you know, fuck it, paint whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I couldn't believe a teacher was going to tell you that. I mean, that's talk about a blank canvas. Yeah. So I started painting for me, and I think the other guy did too, and we started making our own art. I mean, that was 24, you know.
Did you take any painting classes at WSU?
Mm-hmm. No. Oh. We had to as a part of our fundamentals or whatever you call it. It's been so long. I had like a drawing class. I took a life drawing. And I liked it. But it still wasn't, I don't know. That's why I say it was my lost years because you guys are so much younger that you'll probably appreciate this. At 24, I thought, well, I'm done.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing, so I missed the boat because I had to know at 18 or 19. And here I am, this ripe old age of 24, so I'm done. I'm never going to be an artist. So when I started painting, for me, it was this exciting thing because I really had never painted before. And so we had paintings, and I didn't know what to do with them. And the fish house was already starting. So at 18, if there was a scene, I didn't know about it. So my brother, who I lived with at the time after WSU, had come back with this card, and I remember talking to Kevin Wild about it, and that We Are Wichita thing, and I had never publicly said it, but he had a card, and I was like, "What's this?" And he said, "Oh, I went to an art show," and I was like, "What?" He told me about it, and I thought the card was so stupid. It was like a really shitty, and I was like, "Well, they must be terrible, because this fish is really awful." Now I look back, it was this great little minimal thing, but I thought, this is how good they are? So I was kind of fascinated that somebody was showing art in Wichita, Kansas, because I didn't know this was a thing. So I remember Scott Steele and I, I think the first show we went to Fish House had was Center for the Arts. So they had already been big enough that Center for the Arts gave them a show. So we went to that. I remember walking in and just being kind of like blown away. First of all, it was this huge show. And I talked about it with Kevin that I just remember at the time thinking, well, this isn't very good. You know, because it was all very abstract and all these things, and I just kind of thought, we could do this. Now, looking back, it was fantastic. And I've never talked to the guys about it, but they were filling the Center for the Arts, so I think most people might go, that'll be good, we'll throw that one up. But I remember Kent Williams had a piece that had like a shoe on top of it, and I was like, what? You know, but it was a great show in hindsight. But it motivated us, you know.
What year was
this? This would have been, I want to say, if I graduated in 85, I want to say it's 90, 92,
I was really, I was hoping you would say it was a really great shoe. It was a shoe, but it was an awesome shoe.
I don't even remember
shoe.
What it was, really, if it was a tennis shoe, and it probably wasn't even supposed to be there. Someone probably just threw it up there. So people went, oh.
Yeah. Where's my shoe?
So anyway, we decided to try to have a show, and we did, so, which was the most exciting thing in the world to me at the time, that we were actually artists having an art show. Because I thought I missed a boat. I did not think that would happen to me. At the ripe old age of 25, it was happening. I felt like this late bloomer. But I had met guys at that time that were. I mean, they graduated master's degree at WSU and were artists like Mark Bosworth and Brad Hart. And they were killing it. You know, their stuff was amazing. And they were, like, Mark Bosworth was on his own plane, which I didn't know artists could do that. I mean, we weren't allowed to do it because my stuff was pretty straight ahead. I mean, it was weird, but I thought it needed to be as realistic as possible. And, you know, Mark's, you know, doing collage and all this kind of stuff. And a roommate I had at the time or earlier that turned me on to Robert Longo and Rauschenberg and all these guys. And I'm looking at these books, which I was like, it's okay, you know, because I thought art had to be pretty straight ahead, but to have it be that bizarre.
I was actually looking at your work earlier, and these three artists came to mind, Hans Hoffman, Robert Rauschenberg, and Basquiat.
Mm-hmm.
Are those any that you've
yeah,
looked at?
Yeah. I would say that early on, the ones that caught my eye were James Rosenquist was a big one.
Yeah.
But his stuff was very realistic and how it blended together, and I thought, you know, that was acceptable, you know. Basquiat, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I see a lot of Basquiat in all your paintings.
Yeah.
Hans Hoffman's more of the colors, I think.
I think that at the time it was kind of, you know, I was trying to stay fairly straight ahead when we first started, and I think I got tired of it really quick because growing up, I mean, I can't speak for any other artist, but growing up, when you start as a kid, kids' art is so freaking amazing because kids aren't thinking about it. They're just making art. And then society comes in and fucking just destroys them. You know, starts telling them, you know, that proportion's off and that arm's weird and all that. I went through that, I remember, you know. And so you start to question if you're any good or not, which I think is the most horrible thing to do to a child. And most people decide, well, I suck, and they stop, but they might have a passion for it. And as you're moving forward, I think you're always, as an artist, trying to be as good as you can. And I mean that your perspectives are right, or your proportions are right. And I'm lazy, so I got bored with that really quick. Yeah. But I was still trying to do it. So when we started the Famous Dead Artist Art Group, I think I very quickly started seeing people around me and people that I was reading about. So I wanted to kind of go to the crazy stuff as fast as I could. But there's an old saying, you can't... That's one of my favorite sayings. It's, you got to know the rules before you break them. And I kept thinking, well, I don't know the rules yet. So I got kind of obsessed with this, I have to be better. But I really wanted to go do this fucked up stuff. Yeah. So that's where the Wade Hampton thing came from. Because I had a roommate when I was, 21. And he was a really good illustrator. And he was drawing and I was drawing. And I remember that he was a big Stephen King fan. And Stephen King, I think, had a pseudonym, Richard Bachman or something at the time, that he would do books under a different name. Well, he was doing this crazy style for him, my roommate was. And I said, whoa, that's different. And he said, yeah, I think I'm going to sign it under a pseudonym, which I thought was the greatest thing. It's the whole Bowie thing. It's his personality. And I said, what are you going to do it? And his name was Keith Webb, and his pseudonym was like Stephen Jones. This is the most boring thing. And I was like, fuck. If you're going to have a pseudonym, I want something kind of punk rock. I said, I'm going to be like Iggy Pop or David Bowie. I'm going to be Wade. Hey, we laughed. So I signed it. And at the time, the Supreme Court had passed some kind of legislation about artist ownership because it was a big deal. There was a time where, as an artist, if you didn't trademark your work, it could get stolen. But it finally got this creator's rights that by the sheer act of creating art, it was copyrighted. But we, the company I was working for at the time, the lawyer was like, oh, if you make any art, just put your company name and put a circle C. That's all you got to do. So I got obsessed with the circle C. So I started signing all my weird art, Wade Haight, with a circle C. And it stuck for a while, but I wasn't showing anybody the stuff because I wasn't painting. I wasn't having shows. So I got to where when we did the Famous Dead Artist, I had done stuff that I thought was a little more straight ahead. It was still weird, but it was a little more traditional in its approach. And I remember doing this painting once with house paint. It was really big, and it was really different for me. Kind of Basquiat, a little more pop arty. And I remember it was just a big face chomping down on another person. He was in there, and it said, I'd eat you for lunch. And it was this real kind of graffiti thing. And I thought, well, it's different. You know, there's a paint like that. So signing it with my signature didn't seem right. And I suddenly remembered Wade Hate, and I thought, well, fuck it, I'll do Wade Hate. So I had this big Wade Hate signature, and everybody's like, what the fuck is Wade Hate? So I remembered, and so that became my thing, that when I did the weird stuff, I would be Wade Hate. That was okay for me to be mm-hmm. Wade Hate and do that fucked up stuff, but Wade Hampton was still going to please my mom, you know, mm-hmm. do the faces that she would say, oh, the beautiful face. So I kind of would put myself in a different personality. Now, I had a friend later who said, well, you're a Gemini. They have two personalities, Wade Hay, Wade Hampton. So I've always done that. I paint as Wade Hay or I paint as Wade Hampton. It's not like I go down there and, you know, turn into a werewolf or anything. But it's like I feel a certain way when I draw as this person. I feel a different way when I do that. And it's always been that way. I don't know how to explain it. It's never said that out loud. It's really stupid.
So do you...
No, it makes sense.
When you paint, like, is there... okay, I'm going to ask you the question... What is your painting? What's your art about? What is there like a specific...
I don't know. Mark Mothersbaugh, I wish I could remember the quote because it was so great. I should remember it. But he said something about all your art through your life is... God, I wish I could remember. But he had a quote about basically your whole body of work is telling kind of the same story. You know, you'll find that you're on... They're the same characters and blah, blah, blah. And, you know... I got a lot of years on you guys, and I'm still sitting here at 48 going, I don't know, what the hell am I trying to say? I'm kind of obsessed with the same things, especially, you know, film, something why I want to get into film so much more than I do art now, is because there's a lot of characters that are kind of in my head and stuff, but I don't know what I want to say with my art. It's a weird thing because 2 years in a row I've done this home show.
Home Sweet Home?
Well, just these ones in my house. And, you know, the whole point of those shows, it would be the fifth time I've kind of done this approach. I did these shows a long time ago I called Art from the Gut. And I kept trying to figure a way to sell art in Wichita, Kansas, which is not an easy thing to do. So I thought, well, what if I do a ton of small work and I price it affordably, then, you know, maybe I'll actually sell this stuff. So I think the first two times I did the show, I did like 100 or 150 pieces in a short amount of time. And I told myself... Well, I can do a couple of things here. One, I can knock a bunch of work out, hopefully make some money, but as an artist, it'll allow me to explore all these crazy styles because I honestly can't spend too much time on this each piece. You know, if you're doing a piece, you know, not that's a terrible example, but, and that's my piece, by the way, I'm not making fun of somebody else, but if you have enough time to work on one painting, you know, you can obsess, you know, I've seen your work, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can get in there and you can second guess it and everything, but when you're doing these pieces, you literally go, fuck it, good enough, fuck it, good enough. Because, yeah. But then you go back and you look at it, and it can be very exciting because you can kind of break these rules you haven't done before. So as I'm doing all that, I'm finding out that you start to learn something about yourself as an artist, and that maybe something that's more crude, people buy, people respond to. And that was that's always been the exciting thing about working with those kind of shows is when you make that much work, I always like people to show me what they bought. Because you kind of go, oh, you know, I'm curious why people respond to it. Now, I have a guilty side always when I do that much work because some of it I don't spend very much time on. And I feel this kind of guilt like, well, I didn't, you know, I kind of just shit that out. Yeah. And they like that. But this is where I work with Dustin Parker during the day. And he kind of has always been good for me to bounce stuff off of. And, you know, he would probably say, who gives a shit? You know, if they like it.
I think, yeah, I mean, a W is a W. I don't know. Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think sometimes in the pursuits I have, some of the most, I would throw it away and other people are quick to pick it up. I don't know, in stand-up, some of the most, just throwaway lines get the most response on stage. Or
I talk to Goody all the time about music, his music. I'm a musician. And he'll like send me a demo and there'll be a bunch. And the one I'll respond to, he's like, oh, crap, I spent 2 seconds on that damn thing. That's the best thing you ever did. I know he wants you to like the thing he obsessed over.
Well, it's like the most flow state one, usually. It's the one you're just not even, you just let go. Yeah, you just scribble something out and it turns out.
Which is exactly perfect. What all those shows are supposed to be about. But at the same time, I always try to show paintings because usually those are the pieces that I've spent some more time on. I mean... I'm not as bad about this, but I used to always feel like if I had any show, I had to have one piece that would prove to people that I could paint.
Yeah, it seems that way. Like, all the other ones are just the, like you said, the throwaways.
Boom, 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 boom. And then one show,
the,
right. Yeah,
that's
right.
Like the...
Which is...
Like one realism. The headliner. Right.
That's Wade Hampton, big time.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, what's the... Can you look at a piece of art and tell the difference between Wade Hate and Wade Hampton? If I were to look at two different things, like, are they completely different styles?
Well, how they'd be signed.
Right, but the styles
Yeah. I think that, I don't know. It's, it's such a dumb thing because, I would say the cruder, the raw, the more primitive, a lot of times but the funny thing is, this is how stupid this is. And I know this is dumb. I say this out loud is because I'll say to myself, that was a Wade Hate piece, but I'll sign it Hampton because I think the signature looks cooler. Literally, I want to just write Hampton like I do. I like the crude. So Hamptons go on most of my stuff, and I know that that's a Wade Hate piece in the way that I approach it, but I usually sign the papers Wade Hate because I like the way the signature looks. But I can't pull that off on a painting, and I think I was just going to fuck my piece up. So almost all my paintings are Hampton.
I was talking to Lindsay Herkimer earlier, and I was just asking her what she thinks about your work, and she's saying that she thinks they're very wholesome, they're about family and love, and she thought it was interesting because, this is a quote from her, she said, "He's Wade Hate, but his work is all about love." And I was just wondering what you think about that.
Well, I think that, very nice of her. I think that when I was in my 20s, I was a little more hung up on stuff being slightly political.
Yeah.
Like the first painting I ever sold was to Joe Goodwin, who's a huge collector in town, great guy. It was called American Copywriter. And a friend of mine was a copywriter at the time, and now he's president and CEO of Soldering in the Sink up in Kansas City. But at the time, John January, I used him as my model, took a picture and did this thing. And I thought the power of being a copywriter, and it was during a political season, and so it had this guy crucified on a cross and this copyright. I mean, it was this. I was passionate about that stuff. But I got to a point where, and I'm still there, that when it came to my paintings, most of the time it was like, I don't really care about the message in the sense that oh my God, I have to get my pain across in these pieces. So I got to a point where I was a lot more, how do I put this? I was a lot more interested in the creation of the piece, the mediums, and the structure.
You don't really care about meaning or any of that?
Well, I do only in the sense that, I started kind of, Picasso is one of my favorites and biggest influence, but I would go back and I'd look at all this stuff, and it was always, woman reading, man with guitar. Mm-hmm. So I started getting on this kick where I did Mother and Child's, like that. Musicians, I like that, and I did a lot of the same thing and continue to, because if I did something that spoke to me, a lot of times it was the same thing. There's a reason throughout history. I have a book of literally nothing but mother and child that every artist has ever done, and so it's to me, it's like, well, I'm doing something that connects to the audience, connects to me, that's why I'm doing it. But I can focus on the style, because that's what I'm in the learning process. I want to do, I have no desire to, try to draw attention to a political situation in my paintings or something like that, because I'd probably fail horribly. So I wanted to connect with people. And home and family and all that. Lindsay's right. Heck, I write them on the front.
And like the holding babies and people hugging each other.
Yeah, I don't know. You want to connect, but I've always said, and I'll probably never do it, and Dustin's always saying, just do it. As I always say, I'd love to do a show of like four paintings that are Wade Hate, and that they are just darker. Because, I'm a big old comic book geek. And, there's a Marshall Arisman, I think is the painter's name, and his stuff was always really good and fucked up. And I always thought, I just want to do some fucked up paintings and not have to, just pay some of my bills, some of these shows. So when they're successful, I'm like, thank God. Now, if I have nothing but fucked up paintings on the wall, I'm not going to sell anything.
Just let the art historians figure out the content.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Lindsay already did it. She's an art historian.
Yeah, so exactly.
You're on the right track.
But, and no disrespect to Lindsay, but when I'm dead and gone, if anybody gave two shits about my paintings, I wouldn't want people just to say, He's obsessed with love and family. I'd say, is that all people got from my work was love and family?
He's a loving human.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's worse things to be known for, but yeah, I'd like to say, I probably should have been a little edgier. I had a lot of cigarettes. Anyway, I am obsessed with cigarettes.
From this seat in the house, I see, like, sorry, I just glanced to the left, and I see, like, about 18 2 liters of soda.
Yeah.
Could you think you'd go down with that?
That's,
do you think you might ever be influenced by high fructose corn syrup?
That's me being the youngest of 11 kids and having Christmas and Thanksgiving here.
Oh, yeah.
8 billion nieces and nephews. Yeah.
Everyone drinks pop.
So, I don't even drink pop.
I was going to ask you about your family. Like, growing up, like, was your mom or dad an artist? Like, did anybody in your family do art?
My dad was vice president of advertising with the Wichita Eagle, and he was creative. Yeah, I mean, I didn't see it a lot. He had some old drawings I saw, but he was creative. My mom, no, not really. But there's a lot of creativity in my family. But, you know, I knew, like, I have a sister, Susie, that I remember her stuff in high school or her class. It was just the most beautiful stuff, and she was done. Yeah. To this day, she's never, and I think so many people have that in them, but they're either, well, I mean, it's fine if you just don't want to pursue it, yeah. But I used to get people all the time to come to me art shows and whisper to me that they used to make art, like, you know, what do they fucking know?
Yeah, they always do that.
And
yeah.
They kind of still want to, yeah, and I'm like, well, you can
just do it.
You can paint again. Oh, I don't think I not like you.
Yeah, my brother and my sister. My brother used to do graffiti, and my sister used to do, like, she used to draw, like, these little dresses. Like, she'd do, like, fashion.
Right,
it's fashion
right.
Design,
sure,
but,
sure.
You know, on a amateur level.
Sure, sure.
It was, like,
it's where it's got to start.
Yeah, and then me, I was into comic books and all that, too. So, I mean, yeah, it's interesting how people just kind of...
I think most people are creative. Yeah. I think most everybody is, but I think it's...
It's harder to get people to... show it.
They're terrified.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a weird thing.
Because you're very vulnerable. Like, you're throwing, like, when you do paintings and you have shows and stuff, like, it's all out there.
It's like naked in a room.
Do you still get nervous before a show?
Kinda. It depends. Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's less and less every time, but I still get that little, oh, shit.
So here's the horrible thing. I shouldn't even admit this, but...
No,
it's selling part of it that makes me nervous. I've had two very successful home shows in my house, and the people have been here, you know, and it makes me nervous because what if the credit card machine doesn't work? What if the power goes out? What if? That makes me very nervous. And I'm not a big crowd person, so having all these people in my house, I'm happy because that's why I'm doing it, but it's kind of a... I get a little, like the last one, I was standing over by the fireplace kind of watching, but people are kind of looking at me and go, oh shit, this is my show. Talk to these people, because I'm used to kind of stepping in the background. I kind of thought, oh yeah, this is my show. I'm supposed to be interactive.
Are you ever worried, like, man, people are going to steal my shit or something?
The first time I was a little, not because I actually thought any assholes were going to come, but yeah. I mean, when you're, you know, at that last Halloween party we had a bunch of douchebags come at the end and I'd just be fucking pricks and I was like, sucks. We're not doing this.
I would
anymore.
Be that guy to go to your fridge and just eat your food and stuff.
I'm talking about leaving and knocking every beer over on the way out.
Is that what they did?
Yeah.
That's James.
Are you serious?
What? James, you came
I know.
But James, I know.
He was, wait a second, I have been here before.
I've seen that about that.
It's an accident usually. James.
But no, I've never at the art show. But well, the first time my landlord was a little nervous because she was like, "You're gonna have a lot of people." She said, "My lawyer called and he's worried because you're gonna have like 1,000 people." And I said, "Pih, I'm not gonna have 1,000 people." And
2,000.
I said, "I have renter's insurance. We'll be fine." But yeah, I mean, so but as far as people responding to the art only from a sense of them liking it, no, I don't worry about that. But if I'm trying to sell,
yeah,
I would like them to buy the work, and that would make me nervous if I have 150 drawings on my wall and they all leave and I have 148 drawings on my wall. That would be very depressing. Like, wow, I really fucked this up. So there's nervousness on that, but...
No, you go.
I noticed at your last show, and maybe this wasn't the first time, but it was the first time I noticed that on your drawings you had added a little bit of a caption or a narrative.
Oh,
and you
right.
also were selling some of your writing as well. So
right.
can you talk about branching out from painting to the writing?
I'd always wanted to buy an old typewriter and type up just small stories and then illustrate them, which is not what I did. But I did buy a typewriter, and I would write these two or three lines, and that's all I would do. And I thought, well, that's it. You know, everything I do is visual. Why can't it just be that? So I started doing that, and I always said I was going to hit 100, and I think I'm close to 80, because it's not, you know, it's not something I do a lot. So, I mean, I'm literally, and I type with two fucking fingers. Yeah, so I'm doing that,
fuck you, Midwest,
and I'm terrible at it, so I'm constantly have to start over. Because, anyways, because I'm not about to get wired.
Look at this cat on a coffee.
Were those little stories, like, are they the same process as your painting, where you just kind of...
Well, I didn't expect anybody to see them, but when I did them, I kind of liked them. I thought, well, I'll post them, see if people respond. But to answer Gray's question, I had always used some words in some of my paintings, you know, and I hadn't done that in a while, so I wanted to get back to it. So when I was doing the drawings, yeah, I guess I didn't the first time. Yeah, this last time was the first time that, well, did I last time? I don't know. I like to do these kind of, this is terrible, but I love to, these kind of fat, sassy women with cigarettes. It's like my favorite thing in the world to fucking draw. So you could do just the drawing and that's enough. I did it a long time ago. I know where it came from. It took me a while to process this. Kelly Moody used to have a gallery called Firehouse Gallery. And I had done a drawing once of a woman smoking and a crucifix behind her, and it said all Mabel needed was Jesus and cigarettes. And people responded to it. And it was the first time I had actually put a story in. I was, you know, that's, as an artist, you kind of like, maybe I should do more of those. But I hadn't. So it came from that. So I just doodling it. It was like the drawings were one thing, but when you started putting the story, it was a whole another thing. So, yeah, I like doing that. And I think the filmmaker in me likes the idea of it setting off a story. And those little drawings, I mean, the whole reason I did the writings, I ultimately knew was for me to lead into hopefully doing some of the film stuff, which you and I, Gray, will discuss soon. Those little two-line things are, like, to me, short films. You know?
Yeah, and the captions are really great. Like, I can't remember what it was, but it was, like, Alan, something about gluten, and it was just hilarious because they were so short and funny paired with these abstract little guys that it really was effective. It was great. So
cool, thank
very
you.
Very nice.
But the typewriter ones, they're supposed to just kind of be, I don't know, they're... Those typewriter things, back to the original thing about what you're trying to say, those things are the worlds I like. They're always, they tend to get into, like, cars and aliens and fog. All the imagery that I just think's really great. I don't know. But that's the fun thing is I can make, and they don't have to sell. You know, they just are, and they're probably more, without sounding like an artistic douchebag, they're probably the purest thing because you're not trying to sell them. And the only reason I put them in the show is because I might do a little online book, which is, you know, it's easy to do now. But they were sitting there when I was literally putting the drawings, and I was like, put those on the wall. People are like, you're never going to sell any of those. And I was like, if I don't, so, you know, otherwise they're literally going to sit in their drawer till the day I die. So, and I think I put 80 of them up, and I think I sold 12. And I was like, back then I sold 12. But I was blown away. So, anyway.
I think that's cool that you talk about, when you make art, like, you make it to sell, because a lot of artists are, for some reason, afraid to say things
to
like
admit that.
Because it's like, oh, you're a sellout. But our teacher, John Hammer, he said something about that. He said, you shouldn't have that mentality no more. That he called it the something about Van Gogh, that romanticizing the whole suffering for your
That's
art.
That's why we call our group Famous Dead Artists, because you're not famous till you die. Yeah, fuck that. Who wants that? Yeah.
And I think that's cool. Well, speaking of famous dead artists, was that like a group, or was it like just a show you guys did?
It was a group. Yeah, it was. I left the group at one point. I think it's technically still together. That I don't know. You'd have to ask the other members. But started in 93, and there was eight or nine of us. But yeah, we had multiple shows. We tried to do them every 6 months. If anybody's listening, I'm probably wrong. Was it yearly? I want to say we did it every 6 months.
Was it like a response to like Fish House?
Well, I would say back to when I was telling it originally, Scott and I saw the Fish House show and thought, well, oh, you can show art. That's a thing. I mean, again,
it wasn't in galleries, right? You guys showed it in like houses or garages.
First one we ever had was in that furniture gallery.
Yeah.
Where I found this couch.
Nice.
And after that, the furniture gallery shut down, and we were an art group without a show. And Planet Hair was nice enough to let us literally show in, you know, we, yeah, I mean, it was inside the, you're around the chairs and everything, but we had a show there. And Big Sky, which is now Rain, we met Alan Mares that owned that, and he let us show in Big Sky. And then he had a space upstairs he called Big Sky Heights. Yeah. So we had a couple, we had a bunch of shows up there, and we actually had a gallery up front called FDA Lounge, Famous Dead Artist Lounge, which is now Howard Tenno White. They have opened, they kept the window. They actually have the window hanging on their wall because we had like fake, that kind of fake etched glass look of the FDA logo. So it's hanging up there. But we had at least 10 shows, City Arts, and we're supposed to do one at Center for the Arts, but I think that the last minute they decided our opening was going to be from like 4 to 6 or some fucked up thing like that.
Like during this time, where did you work at, or did you just strictly do art?
So I was working at a company called Resort, and I was the designer, and now I work for a company called Spectrum Promotional doing graphic design.
Okay, so that's like the day job type thing.
Yeah,
okay.
right. Which gotcha. I obviously is, you know, back to saying you're selling art. Hopefully you're selling art that... or you're making art that sells. I have a job and it pays me well, and I have benefits and all the stuff you're supposed to have. So it doesn't have to sell, but you know, nothing wrong with having your work sell. And so I don't ever, to go back and kind of qualify this, I don't ever try to draw something I only think sells, but you do start to learn what sells. And if you like drawing that, you draw more of it, you know? So trust me, if I'm drawing something, I post almost everything I draw online. I think that's important. I used to think, because I'd ask people, you've got to be fucking tired of seeing these drawings. Like, no, if I didn't want to see it, I'd stop looking at it. So I post them. But when you get a good response to something, you can't help it as an artist, as a filmmaker, a musician, anything, to look at it and say, why are people responding to this? Mm-hmm. Especially when you put something up you love and it's like crickets and you go, maybe I should read
this. Does that happen?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Oh yeah,
it seems
yeah.
like every time you post something, it's like 1,000 likes, and I'm like, man, that's
well, cool. I did these stupid little goodnight things, which have nothing to do with me. You know, it's just found stuff I like, and I'm always really fascinated about the psychology of likes.
Yeah,
meaning that, you know, you post a photo, I'm just gonna make this up, Johnny Cash. You know, people are gonna fucking go crazy.
Yeah,
but I'm always a big fan when you post something, you get like 4 people.
Yeah,
because you kind of go, okay, that's that sub.
Yeah,
that's the little group you kind of want to know who this is.
What did you touch with them?
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's great that you put content on. I mean, that's the most important thing online now. If you're not online, you don't have that presence. I mean, I think there's people who aren't online who still manage to stay present and present socially. But that's, I mean, that's what the world craves right now is content. And if you can keep up with it and everything, and it just makes you more vulnerable, more available for critique and more. And yeah, and you get to read all the things you've been saying. I agree with
them. I think posting stuff in general is, to me, like T-shirts. You know, you're just walking around with an image on you, that something that you speak to. It's like, you know, when it comes to Facebook, I'm a bigger fan of having, Steve Buscemi's face than my face on. Because I'm saying this is what I like, instead of just saying here's another nice photo of me or a bad photo.
Oh, yeah,
you know, I like the idea of this kind of constant billboard of, that's publicly saying I like this.
That's why I like Instagram, because that's all it is. It's just
A
little less self-indulgent. Yeah.
Unless
you're posting selfies, which Tim, that's what you do.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with a good selfie.
On the topic of exposure and just how you gain it, and I know a lot of people ask you about this, but when you, I don't know exactly how it came about that you were on Steve Colbert with his painting, but how did that happen, and did that help you gain an audience that you maybe didn't have before?
I don't know if it gained that much. It might, I don't, I, it's, maybe. Mm-hmm. How it happened was, again, this full circle of doing something that you just poop out. That's, I think, if I, let me back up. I didn't know that was a thing. Make this art and it could possibly have it shown on Stephen Colbert. I was fans with him, of course, in the show, but it was on Facebook. And I saw this thing, literally, it kind of came through the feed, and it said, hey, draw on top of his portrait, you know, that was on the fireplace. And I didn't read it. I was pulled over to Photoshop and literally spent 5 minutes on it. I mean, if you see it, it's pretty terrible. And emailed it like you're supposed to, and it was probably 3 months later I got an email from the show, and I thought, oh, that's cool. They're probably going to want more information. They said, call us. they're probably going to want more information because they're going to put it on their website with like 100 others. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's cool. You know, tell people, hey. So I called. I just gotten back from New Orleans, and you know, I'm a little less neurotic than I was then, but I was like, I'm not much of a traveler and being around like strange places. And so I just got back from New Orleans with a bunch of friends, and I was glad to be home, and it was winter, and it was kind of, and I called, and this guy was so, hey, yeah, really like your piece. It's Steven's favorite piece. And of course I was done. Okay, good. That's all I need to hear. I can die. Do you think you could get out of here and possibly be on the show tomorrow night? And it was just like, you know, ringing, and I go, what? And he said, yeah, do you think you could get out here and be? And I go, is this for real? And he was like, yeah. Be on the show? I go, in what way? He goes, physically walk on the show. And I was like, yeah, I went into shock. I thought, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. I don't know. I was completely baffled. Well, it ended up not happening anyway because there was like a nor'easter that set in and all the airports were shut down. Mm-hmm. So it's like, God, save me from having to fly out there and lose my shit. So, anyway, to make a long story short, they were going to do it over Skype, which they did. And I had told a couple of friends that somehow, it was the first time I'd ever, it got to like the Eagle and everything. They contacted me. So I had these articles on me. I hadn't even been on the show yet. So I'm just like, I was terrified. And they kept saying it may not happen because of the news cycle. But it was about 3 or 4 days later that producer called me and said, oh, it's happened. They've written a bit. They're writing a whole segment around you and this art. And I was like, oh. So I was just, my heart's beating now. I'm thinking about it. I was like, oh, fuck. And I literally was on the show in my apartment in front of Skype by myself. And they had their whole crew. We're talking, you know, the control room, everything, figuring it out on them. And I'm one guy going, ah. And they're asking me questions about my modem and can I dial? I'm just like, I remember somebody on Facebook the day of I was taping it going, all of Wichita's watching, no pressure. So I'm just in there thinking, I kept thinking, I'm going to end up being one of those guys that like farts and faints and they turn it into a music video. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're going to auto-tune me and I'm going to be known as that dipshit the rest of my fucking life.
Nobody can handle that.
And they also told me, can you stop talking with your hands because it's breaking the Skype? Yeah. I remember on the, because I'm telling, this is all on iPhone. I'm on the phone. Mm-hmm. I go, you're telling a Sicilian not to talk with their hands? And the guy here at the control room goes, what did he say? And he said he's Sicilian. He has to talk with his hands. He goes, tell him to do the best he can. So I'm sitting there sitting on my hands, and they keep coming. Yeah. So all this is happening. And it wasn't working. Skype kept breaking. It kept popping. You know, uh-huh. At one point, Stephen Colbert yelled out, I fucking love Skype. So I'm like, keep it together. And when you see it cut together, it kind of looks like, oh, everything went fine. It took a while. You know, and so at the end of it, the only thing I can say exposure-wise, and it is interesting, and this is all Colbert, is at the end, he was very nice, and, you know, and he talked to me beforehand. He said, you know how this works, by the way. You know, I'm just play this right-wing dipshit, and I'll probably ask you stupid questions that hopefully just make fun of me. He's really nice. And at the end, he said, Wade, I appreciate it. You know, we love the painting. And I said, get ready for the Colbert bump. And my website was getting about 100 hits a day. And the next morning I got up and it had 48,000 hits.
Jeez.
And they had no link to it. That was people Googling me.
Yeah. Wow.
So cool. I was like, whoa, fuck. Yeah. And about a week later, you know, it went back down to my little 100. So, but yeah, no. So it was, I don't know. I mean, it obviously didn't hurt me, but I don't remember it doing. Yeah, it was a fantastic thing. It was a fantastic experience, but I was terrified the whole time. I think I would have been less terrified just walking on there. Mm-hmm. But it was something about me and the technology, and I was waiting for my computer to go poof. You know what I mean? It's like I had literally no one else around. Like the power goes out, and I'm just like, well, guess it didn't happen. So when it went well, I remember watching it that night. I was just,
oh yeah,
my heart was racing. When it was over, I was like, That's not a disaster.
Are you generally a pretty high anxiety guy?
Or yeah.
Does that drive you?
Yeah. Yeah. Does it drive me? Yeah. It depends on what it is. Yeah. Usually art-wise, I don't have that much anxiety because I'm kind of like, it's art. You know, it's open to interpretation. But something like that so public, yeah, I don't like that at all. Mm-hmm. I'm not a, you know, art you make in your basement, you know. And you kind of are confident with it by the time you stick it on the wall. Mm-hmm. But public performance, kind of frightening to me.
You go, Tim.
I was just going to say, I always imagine, so some people, that you know, you said when you're 20-something, early 20s, you didn't really know which direction you were headed.
Sure.
Sometimes you point in certain directions and your wheels just spin and around mid-20s, you said you kind of caught traction a bit and headed in that direction where you kind of all that kind of stuff accumulates to where you are now. Would you say 24, 25, all those things started clicking and you started
moving forward? Yeah, 25. It was about exactly when I, probably in the first time in my adult life, I felt like I was being me. It sounds so kind of Hallmark card, but it was true. It was kind of like, oh, I'm an artist. I remember asking Mark Bosworth, I said, can you tell people you're an artist? He goes, what do you mean? Do you, are you able to say to people I'm an artist? He was like, yeah, we are. And I was like, I didn't feel good about that. I felt like that was cocky. And
I still feel like that, like the whole like, oh, you're an artist. And I just feel like, just don't say it. I don't know. To me, it just, I feel like it's cocky. And
I think it's how you own it. I think it really comes down to how you own it. I've met people who say, I'm an artist.
Yeah. You're not like humble about it.
Try telling people you're a comedian. Like, it's still worse.
Tell me a joke.
So, that would be even more because then you're on the spot.
When you say you're an artist, they say, oh, can you do tattoos?
Yeah.
That's the first question.
How many tattoos?
All the time.
So I was going to ask you, how do you approach a canvas being in Wichita, like your age right now, where you're at in life, like how do you approach a canvas?
I always do the same thing. I just throw a bunch of paint down and I turn it around a couple of times and start to see what it is. I mean, I go in sometimes knowing a little bit. You know, when I do these big faces, and those big faces are kind of for my mom. Mm-hmm. My mom passed away this last year, and I remember when I was in my 20s, I would do kind of, sorry, I'm just staring out. I do that. I stare at the other paintings. I used to do faces, and I try to make them as realistic. I mean, I really was obsessed with trying to make them as real, photorealistic as I could. And I got away from that. Now I'm not as concerned about that. But people would respond to them, and my mom, God bless her, who would come to every show, you know, would always love those. But then I'd have some really kind of fucked up stuff. I remember one having, we did a piece, everybody in Famous Artists had to do something, had a toaster in it, and I had like a toaster, like robot and a woman, and his extension cord was plugged into her vagina. I mean, it was just really kind of, my mom was like, I get it. she got it. It was weird, but she kind of knew what I was going with it, but it was like, whatever. She didn't understand the whole Wade Hank thing, but fine. So I didn't do the faces for a long time, but now I'm kind of back into them, and I kind of like the, it's still the Wade Hampton thing. That would be the more Wade Hate thing. But so that, you know, I posted this one. I did like six stages. It was a disaster till I got to there, and some might say it still is. But I'm happy with the piece, but I had no clue what the hell that piece was going to be. But when I do kind of the faces, I mean, I know what they're going to be, and they don't always end up that way. I've had those start, and I think it looks so shitty, I go, and that eyeball's not going to be the head of a... So I like that about painting. I mean... I'd like to even get more abstract, you know, with on stuff I move ahead on. But
I love that, that there's that dichotomy that you kind of embrace the back. And I don't know if you're illustrating that on purpose at all with your hands. You have art on your hands. You have a knife on one and a cross on the other, right, which could be, if you interpret it, pretty polar opposite.
I guess it could be. That's for my dad. That's for my mom. So,
okay, the knife is for your dad.
Are you Catholic?
I was, That's why when I got this for my dad. He passed away about 12 years ago, and he had the exact same tattoo in the exact same place, and he gave it to himself as a kid by accident. That's a whole other story. He did it in school. He had heard that if you take
a pen and poke,
and he said it scabbed up, and he drew it just like it looked exactly like that. And he said it scabbed up, and he thought, oh, crap. And he said finally when the scab came off, he said he was like, man, it worked. And he was only like 9 or 10. I mean, he was little.
Did you do the same thing?
No, I did not. No. But when he was dying, this was pre-cell phone, you know. But I'm literally, I was in the hospital, he was dying, I'm like sketching it. And I thought, this is morbid. But I always told him when he dies, because I took care of him a lot. He was paraplegic the last 23 years of his life. So you know I'm going to get that tattoo. And he was like, you know what? I'm like, getting that fucking tattoo. So I did that. So I always knew I was going to get something for mom. And she passed away this last fall. I was going to do a crucifix because she was so diehard Catholic, and it's in me, I know. So,
that guilt is real.
I'm right there with you.
But anyway, I just went with the cross. But Shayla Roach, I was Shayla Roach. I was Shayla. I had met her the first time she did it at Hellbomb, but I was sending her the image, and she was like, that's fantastic, but it's just going to turn into a big blob. This is the crucifix, so we just ended up doing that.
Hellbomb's actually one of our sponsors.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, they're super nice.
Shout
guys.
Out to Hellbomb.
I was going to ask you about the halos. I noticed in a lot of your work you have halos.
Mm-hmm.
Does that tie in with being Catholic? Like, is there any religious?
I guess more the graphic designer in me. I just did mm-hmm. it once and liked it, and it stuck. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of Basquiat had his crown,
mm-hmm.
so I started doing halo, and I was like, yeah, I like the halo. Well, when I first started painting, they were very much the graphic designer brain, very mm-hmm. much. I mean, there was a lot of circles and arrows pointing to this and the type. So it was kind of more of a graphic designer painting. I don't feel that way anymore now. It's just a painter painting. But I like type and
mm-hmm.
those kind of little icons and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So you talked about your mom's opinion about your art. How'd your dad feel about your art? Like,
you know, he, I don't think he gave two shits, and I don't, that sounds like I'm meaning he was a, you know,
yeah.
he just didn't care. It was like, eh, fine. Well, he was in a wheelchair, yeah. and like when we had the shows up at,
bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, no, but what I mean was when we did our shows, there were a lot of times like a big guy up two flights of stairs, and we used to carry him up,
yeah.
and I knew he was like, you know, I can just stay home.
Yeah.
This is too much.
Yeah.
So very early on, I just kind of, and he was a great guy, but it just wasn't his thing. So, and I respected that.
Yeah.
I feel that about anybody.
That's
it's like when I invite him to the art show, they feel like, oh, do I have to come? No, you don't have to come.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So mom was extremely supportive, even though she wanted me to, you know, sign everything Wade Hampton and they all look like Rembrandt paintings and be about, you know, the mother and child are all cool. But yeah, I get off on the other thing. Well, she came up to me once at a show and said, well, I've talked to the whole family, and we've all agreed you're getting worse. My stuff was getting more
wow.
bizarre. And she said the greatest thing to me. She said, I go, well, I get that, but most of my painter friends think I'm getting better. And she goes, oh, I know. It's just like jazz. It's like when it's all honky and squeaky and everything, and it doesn't sound like crap. All the other jazz musicians say, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah.
There you go.
That's
exactly
kinda,
what it is.
That's kind of how my parents were. Like, my dad doesn't give a shit. And then my mom, she liked, like when I started doing the paintings I do now, she was kind of like, mm. And then every show I've been in, Hannah Scott was in it, and you know, her stuff
sure,
has
sure.
always been awesome. And she's always like,
you should do more like that.
Yeah, can you do that?
Like, can you be Hannah. Amazing?
But I don't, you that's understand that though.
Yeah.
You understand.
I mean, that's a struggle yeah. for every art form, right? Where you're being true to yourself, your community, and then also commercially, like what's accessible to your, you know, I don't know. That's what I find a lot.
No, I think you're exactly right. I mean, it's, you know, anytime you're making any art, there's, you're serving so many masters. And mm-hmm. I remember I'm a big Jesus and Mary Chain fan, the band. And I remember when they had done this, I think they considered themselves done at the time. Thank God they got back together so I could see them in Dallas last year. But anyway, they had put out this album that was kind of you know, their greatest hits, and they had written in the beginning basically about their career, and they said something about 3% of it was fantastic and 97% of it was complete fucking bullshit. And I was talking to Gooding about that, and he's like, they're talking about being on stage. You know, it's like you deal with all the bullshit, but the second you get on stage, you're like, this is why I do it.
Yeah.
So I think any artist, you kind of find that sweet spot, and that's where I'm at 48. It's like, you know, I still love painting, drawing, and all this, but, you know, I really want to get into filmmaking because I've been dabbling in it for 20 years, but I honestly feel like I've done nothing but dabble, meaning mm-hmm. I'm just sketching. I've never actually made something I want to be able to say as an artist, you know, show a film. I don't care if it's just on Facebook or for five friends. I want to be able to say, that's the best I can do. And right now I haven't done that. And I feel like with some paintings, yeah, not very many, but I still don't think I've shown anything where I say that's the best I can do. That's why people say, you're not lazy, you can get a lot done. It's like, no, I'm laying out with some of the words. I feel like that kind of stuff might... I feel like the paintings are off on their own.
Yeah, I have a book by Joe Murray, the guy who did Rocco's Modern Life.
Love him.
And he used to do... He's talking about how he used to do comics. And somebody pointed out to him, when he was looking at him, he said, they should move. They need to move. And then that's when he started animating. And that kind of reminded me.
I'm just now learning After Effects, and that's what Dustin said. You should take a couple of your people and just have them, like, talk. And I was like, yeah, maybe. So it's a...
You should, man.
Do you want to see the coolest thing ever? I mean, I worship David Lynch. That's the dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You ever seen his Dumbland series?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really good.
And he does everything.
I mean, YouTube.
He draws it, does the voices. That makes me... That's stuff I could...
Mm-hmm.
I was going to ask you, like, on topic of like other like filmmakers, like what other influences other than artists, like filmmakers, musicians, like anybody that influenced you, like, you know, who are they? Like,
when I was a kid, it was Jim Henson,
nice,
Ray Harryhausen, nice. Devo, Motley Crue, yeah, anything metal when I was a kid, and anything kind of art rock. Yeah, filmmakers, Coen Brothers, Kubrick, Lynch. Lynch is it for me across the board, because to me he's the pinnacle of, you know, losing David Bowie was one of the big ones, because you realize this is a person that's dabbled. I mean, to me, it was such a, I honestly did not say it to be cocky. I just thought it was kind of my what I aspired to. And I think Facebook as occupation for a while, I had Renaissance artist, because a Renaissance man, because it wasn't trying to be cocky. It's like, as an artist, I think, to me, to be a true artist, you want to dabble in everything. Even if you suck at it, you just want to try it. Casey Kreider, I don't know if she came up with this quote on her own, but she said once, "I want to make one of everything." And I thought, yeah, I get that.
See, Tim makes fun of me when he's like, "Oh, you know how to do this?" I'm like, "No, but I'll figure it
out."
Yeah. He's always like, "Yeah, somebody asked me to do stop animation." And I said, "Have you done it?" And he's like, kind of. I was like, is that what artists do? They just like
you just like, think we should.
Figure it out.
You just,
that's what. Yeah.
Well, Pat's recently convinced me to become a maintenance man, and he's just like, Tim, you just do it. Just look it up and
just YouTube it.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, I know so many people I'm not that good at, but they'll sit there and go, as long as I get to YouTube,
I told you.
That's how I fix my cars.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. So. I hope my new boss doesn't listen to this and know I'm full of shit.
He doesn't listen. Trust me.
Yeah.
You said you like Devo. Did you see at the Orange the Bruce Conner show? He directed the video for Mongoloid.
Oh my god, no, I didn't.
Yeah,
see
it's
that.
It's pretty fucking awesome.
That's fantastic. Yeah, yeah, no.
I think it's on YouTube. It might not be because it's like copywritten and it's.
Oh, look. That's hand down my favorite Devo song.
Like yeah, that. I mean, I never heard of Devo. I never listened to them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the song I listened to because of that video, and it's fucking awesome.
I'll look it up.
Yeah.
100%.
What are you afraid of?
I knew this was coming.
Well, it's about the end, and I had to sneak it in.
This is Tim's favorite question, by the way.
What are you afraid of?
You mean in all of life?
Yeah.
Well, shark attack.
Really?
Yeah.
At any moment in Wichita.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything.
Just jump
through. My most ultimate fear is. Claustrophobia and anything under the water.
Mm-hmm.
Man,
I'm not a big water. Yeah, I can. Huh. I've been in the ocean and all that, and I have to kind of just. But the idea of something, especially if it's murky water.
Mm-hmm. Bill Burr recently said. I heard him say that we're mostly afraid of the jungle in general. We can't live there. It's horrible. Everything wants to kill us. And then the ocean is an underwater jungle, and you can't even survive. Under there from
I've always felt like, first of all, I agree with all that. I've always felt like anything on land, you kind of feel like maybe you can run from it. Maybe.
Yeah. Except a cheetah.
Yeah, you couldn't. I mean, most everything could.
Or in the jungle. Life.
Yeah, everything in the jungle will kill you. Because you're just going to run into more of it. But the water, we're just.
You can't even survive under, where they fine. Are.
And you're tired and you go under.
And you need it to live. Ain't that crazy?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Is that something you guys ask everybody?
Tim does. Yeah.
Well, I'm
Tim's
afraid.
Afraid of
what's the best answer you've got? I want to know more about
that.
That was a good answer.
Yeah, I'm trying.
And everybody always says the same thing. We're in Kansas. You don't have to worry about it. And I'm like, I know. That's why I'm fucking.
No, it's even unexpected.
I was going to ask you your favorite local artists.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask.
Boom!
Right on.
Well, people would probably, since I work with them, think I would, but Dustin Parker.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you
he's kind of like me in the sense that and Dustin's a lot better than me in the sense that he'll figure it out.
Mm. He's a Renaissance man.
Yeah,
you think he'll do this, the podcast?
Sure, absolutely.
Let's get him.
Let's do it.
Yeah, I think that.
Wade said he would.
There's a lot of good artists, but I'll put him.
I tried to get Kurt Klontz on here, but I don't know what happened with that one. But maybe.
This will be interesting.
Yeah. I like Kurt. Kurt's a cool dude.
We have a long history, Kurt and I. Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah,
Dustin would do it in a heartbeat. You better wait a couple weeks till he gets over this bronchitis crap he's got. Mm-hmm. He's hacking up a lung right now.
How long has he done his blog, The Proteus Man? That's his, right?
8 years he's been doing the Daily Artist. I tell people all the time, if you're looking for any inspiration art-wise, ProteusMag.com. He's been doing this thing. And
ProteusMag.com.
Proteus, ProteusMag.com. And he does Artist of the Day. He's been doing it for 8 years.
Oh, shit.
He's been doing it for like months ahead, so it's all, you know, automated. Yeah. So he even forgets. I'll go, oh, that's good. He goes, oh, what is it? I forgot about that. But talk about it. I think it's the best database in the whole internet. If you're just looking for art to inspire you for anything, you just go through this. And even the way he's got it laid out is brilliant. Yeah. It's pretty amazing. And he just kind of quietly does it. And I said, dude, this is important. Because he goes, like, I mean, he has his stats. Yeah. He'll put up, you know, a comic book artist and get thousands of hits, like from Japan or something, especially. So it's out there, but I don't think he gets much feedback. And he sure as heck didn't make any money on it, but that's Dustin. I mean, Dustin's just kind of the dude that will just
keep going at it.
Well, it's like those last two shows I've had in my house. He came over, I would have never done it, with a scanner, scanned every single one on board. He said, you need to have these. You have a digital site? I do. At some point, you might want to post some of these. I'm like, okay, thanks. Yeah. That's Dustin.
That's awesome.
Because would I go to his house and scan him?
When you were growing up, you said you liked comics. Did you look at any artists? Like, what artists were you
interested? I didn't get to see a lot because we were broke and living in the country. But as I got older, and I was just the typical Frank Miller and Bill Sienkiewicz, who I'm friends with on Facebook, which is awesome because I actually get to see his daily stuff. And I think the only reason he actually friended me, not because of me, trust me, but we had a mutual friend. She lives in, I want to say she's back in Paris now, and who I met through Twitter because of David Lynch. See, it's all back to David Lynch. And we kind of hit it off, and so we're commenting on the same things, and I don't know if she ever brought me up, but I remember when he friended me, I turned to Dustin, I said, Bill Sienkiewicz just friended me! Because you would friend him, and it would never get accepted. But anyway, to be able to see somebody on a daily basis, just because he doesn't have a page, it's his friend. I mean, it's only 5,000 people. Yeah. And so that's cool. This is a tangent, but that's the amazing thing about the internet and social media. Somebody is godlike as Bill Sienkiewicz can just be like, doodle this on a napkin. Oh my God, so brilliant. Yes, that'd be like just having Bowie just, hey, 5,000 people in the world, hear some stuff. So it's pretty mind blowing.
I feel really bad that you're mentioning Bowie, and while I was setting up the microphone, I said something I was bidding on.
I tried to tell you.
Yeah. Said I was bidding on.
Hey, that's all right. Hey, I'm sure a lot of people are probably out there trying to make money. Hey, Dustin and I had a discussion today because we both have our portrait. And that created the site we use, put the portrait on the front page. And we were talking about, oh, we should let, you know, that's kind of cool. We'll put that out there. And I just repeated what Dustin put out there. And he put, like, our web page. And I said, should we be posting? Like, people can buy this when he just died? Mm-hmm. That seems kind of opportunistic.
Well, you did it for his birthday, right?
I actually did it 6 months ago and on his birthday because it's just that site, you know, our digital site's just kind of sitting there. I thought, if you want to sell, and I had like four people buy some, which is nice. But doing it again, and Dustin and I were talking, of course, we both agreed, we don't make any money off these, you know, it's like, we're just posting something. Because Dustin's like, this is what I love about Dustin. He's like, no one gives a shit. No one's sitting around going, how dare those motherfuckers, you know? So it is what it is.
Well, when I did the Donald Trump shirts, I was a little worried about, like,
people finding you.
Well, that and, like, no, I didn't give a shit. I was worried about,
he's a public figure. He can't sit here.
I was worried about, like, Warner Brothers. I wasn't even worried about that. It was more like, am I, like, exploiting shit, you know? Which I am, but, you know, sorry.
I think, see, it's different. If anybody's listening to this, I want to go on record. Should we post that you can buy a David Bowie print the day after he dies? No, we probably shouldn't. Really, I don't think we should. So, you know, I had actually a couple of people write me and say, hey, is that print still available? So I justified in my brain, like, I'm just letting people know it's out there if they want it. But it's still me being a prick and doing it, and I still kind of felt shitty about it.
You should do it, but they're $39.99.
Yeah. Yeah. Go to my website.
But if you want it, I mean, we didn't, cool. Neither one, I mean, one of the things Dustin and I talked about, neither one of us sat down and made the drawing and posted it and said, by the way, go buy it. I mean, they've been there. Yeah. So,
feature them on their homepage?
Yeah, they did. Like right. But still, it feels kind of, but back to what you're saying, to me, Trump's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For you to make some kind of political statement and for you to make money off it, good.
Yeah.
As an artist, my God, fuck yeah. Especially in the political realm, I think, do more.
What is the website? What is your website?
It's just WadeHamptonArt.com. I have WadeHate.com too, actually. It goes to it.
There you go.
Nice. Wade but Hampton don't buy Hart. David Bowie. I feel guilty.
Well, by the time this is posted,
it's fine.
Will be too
then.
Soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's.
It might be. He's pretty.
Yeah.
He's pretty.
It'll
well
be too
loved.
Soon for a while.
Robin Williams. That I like. I thought Robin Williams. That death would last forever. Like everyone would talk about it forever. Because you see people.
Dude, remember, Mrs. Doubtfire was a long time
ago. I just. You just see the. You know the. The traffic on Facebook, it just comes up and dies so fast. And Robin Williams is the first stand-up I ever remember watching, and I just thought it would last forever. People remembering him and talking about him, and it was like 4 days
I think
or less,
that's,
and it just hurt.
I think that's just kind of the internet, though.
Yeah.
You know, when you see something scandalous happen, I'm sure the PR people go, in a week, somebody
will
be
I think that's the negative aspect of everyone being hungry for content, is everything just dies so quickly now.
Yeah,
everything,
yeah. It's hard to kind of
so
have
fast.
It sit there and
yeah.
be in the zeitgeist for sure. Yeah.
I had a morbid thought yesterday about how there are so many celebrities that are going to die in our lifetime. Like, one day we'll be mourning Justin Timberlake. Like, yesterday I was just like, wow, like
dude,
all of Stanley's these celebrities
gonna
are going to die.
Well, people run death pools and they have bets. And
I have a friend.
100 names who are going to die.
The thing I always find interesting, and I'm sure, I don't know that this happened with Bowie, he's only 69 for God's sakes, but, you know, I read years ago about all the major news stations, how they have all this stuff ready.
Like on 30 Rock? Do you remember 30 Rock?
Yeah.
Where they did, like, they pre-taped disasters, and then they did
oh, right,
they did
right,
Jen Maroney's
right,
death. And
right, right.
Just in case she died.
Snuck in 9/11. Snuck in
9/11. But it's funny. 9/11.
Somebody's
yeah.
sitting there doing that. You know, it's like, well,
yeah.
they're going to be around for it. No, have it ready.
You never know.
You never know. Because, so, you know, I remember as a kid kind of, because back then, you know, I'm old enough that it was like, wow, that they got that together quick. Well, if it was Bob Hope and he was 90, probably already had a ready.
They've got Betty White on lock. Like, everyone's ready.
They're just
ready.
Died
older.
Like an hour ago.
That mean, well, crazy thing, this is a bigger discussion, but there are people at major news networks, that's probably their job. Well, today, who's next on the list?
Let's go through the alphabet.
Yeah. Seventy and above, let's just have them ready.
Yeah, they
do say that there were certain news stations that had... that reported the second tower falling before it did.
Tower 7.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Jessica should be here. I guess she would go nuts.
Is
on
she the conspiracy theorist?
Oh, she and Bernardo. I spent my day in it, but it gives me too much.
I try not to. I can get my head wrapped around that stuff.
Yeah.
That's why I don't listen
you,
to it.
Jessica got me watching.
You dig a pretty
this,
deep hole.
Yeah, watching To Make a Murderer.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's just like,
oh, well, that's all another thing. That's not a conspiracy theory.
That's blatant police.
That is blatant police corruption.
Work, yeah.
And those guys have got to be shitting bricks.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Hey, that documentary they did on you is kind of the biggest in the world right now. They're going, really?
I mean, I have 2 more episodes left, so.
Oh,
spoiler. I only watched 2 episodes, and I think I'm done. I don't think I can.
It's real. It'll enrage.
Making a Murder?
So annoying. Yeah.
Is it good?
I watched the first episode and fell asleep, so I need to.
Oh,
it's
nice.
It's really sad that it's how much they exploit how dumb people are, and I hate to say that, but it's just like.
No.
It's horrible. It's just not even fair.
Somebody had posted that.
Are we still wrong?
You don't want to be. What was it? I don't remember how it was, black or Muslim or dumb and white in America. This was based on that. And I thought, yeah, I mean, obviously, I won't get on my liberal stance about how minorities are treated, but yeah, if you're dumb and white, especially, that's a whole other discussion.
Well,
I mean, I think if you're dumb and white, you drive all that's evil for the most part, right?
Well, I mean, it's just,
and even
in
smart
that
and
particular
white
thing, they're just easy prey.
Right.
Which is why it's so great that there's being a spotlight put on it. Because you're thinking of Manitowoc County, Minnesota. They're probably like, we can just destroy these people all day long. Who gives a shit? You know, and suddenly, you know, this is getting all this. They're going, whoa, I didn't expect anybody to ever see this.
Right.
To be held accountable is a pretty great thing if you're doing evil things like that.
Well, not to get on the soapbox either, but it's like, if that's how they're treating a dumb white guy, how are they treating minorities? Because we already know that.
Are you saying minorities are dumb white people?
No, I'm saying that minorities
dumb,
are treated poorly.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
A dumb black lesbian that's handicapped?
Jesus.
Well, but even, I'm just being very serious about it. Like
a quadruple minority.
Dude, we watched Nasty Baby.
It all comes down to the same.
And that was about,
if you're rich and white, you're probably okay. But if you're anybody else, you're going to get fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they'd rather close a case than be human. So
it's ugly and sad. And it makes you want to cry.
Anyway, I was going to bring up Nasty Baby, but I'm not. I think we're pushing an hour and 10. So.
Well, I have one more. What?
Oh, you have another?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask. Do you feel like, going back to your work, do you feel like emotion or like what drives you to paint? Like, do you feel like after, guys, sorry, like after your mom passed, like, did you feel like, did you stop painting for a while or did it make you like want to paint more? Like, does like things happen in your life, you know, have effect on your work? Like relationships?
No.
Things like that?
I don't think so, actually. I think it's it's a good question. I think as an artist, you just make art. And you continue to make art and have to make art. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure for a lot of people, they're, you know, what happens in their life comes into it. Of course it does. I mean, I'm sure it does. I think the little typewriter things can for me. You know, if
input
I was...
Input affects the output.
Yeah, I mean, if my mom just died and I want to sit down and do that, I might talk about, you know, and I did. If you go back and read those, some of them are talking about, you know, this woman sitting in a... My mom had Alzheimer's the last few years, so I addressed that in a couple of those writings. So, yeah, they come in. But a painting, probably, you know, unless I was doing a mother and child and I was focusing on that a little bit. But I don't feel... Back to what you said, I don't feel compelled when it comes to paintings to kind of address something that's going on in my life. Okay. Now, we're talking about the Making a Murderer stuff and the injustice of, you know, minorities and all that. If I was personally feeling the pain of reality, I may not be so quick in my art to do something flippant, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or dark, because I think, God, there's so much darkness in the world. Do I really want to do something that's negative right now? Well, if everything seems happy and fine, it's like, I'm going to do some fucked up shit in this film. You know, I'm going to do this horror film and have it be crazy and da da da. But if I was feeling kind of this guilt of, do we really want to put this negativity? I think, yes, I have experienced that before, where some stuff that had happened locally that was awful and we were getting ready to make art, you know, film-wise, that was addressing something that was kind of awful, we're like, I don't want to do that. I've had people that we were going to make stuff for, you know, film-wise or music videos, have stuff happen and we change our tune on how we're going to do it because of circumstances that have come. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I'm rambling, but...
No, it does.
I sometimes wonder if filmmakers on the big level, if they spend 2 or 3 years and they're doing like a horror film and it's real fucked up, but they're, you know, they know it's art, you know, it's fake blood and everything, but then something happens in their own life. Do they want to shut the film down, you know what I mean? Because suddenly they're going to work kind of doing horrific things, even though everybody, you know, I've heard filmmakers say, oh, some of the funnest sets are horror film because everybody's kind of laughing and not taking it too seriously. But you're kind of like, do I want to put that negativity in the world when I'm seeing this stuff happen in my own private life, or, you know, 9/11, something like that happened? Well, if maybe we should shut this down for a while.
If you ever, you know, Frank Miller, obviously, when 9/11 happened, he was writing the sequel to The Dark Knight. Dark Knight Strikes Again, and he said that he felt really weird because there was a scene where Batman flies the Batmobile into the Twin Towers in Gotham, and he felt kind of like, it was like, do I do
it's
it?
Too close.
Do I
not do it's it? Too close, it's too soon, all that. But the thing is, 10 years later, you know.
I think he ended up doing it, though, because it's like, well, if I don't do it, then they win, and, you know, whatever, I don't know.
I think it's... It's a weird... I don't think what's going on in your life how can it not affect your art? But I hit on the same kind of themes in my paintings and stuff. So, well, it's...
Like, when I look at, like, especially, like, this painting right here, like, I see, like, the figures, and one's playing saxophone, and, like, we discussed, like, how, you know, your love for jazz and stuff, but, like, you know, going to WSU, and it was all concept-driven, and, like, looking at, you know, when I look at art, I always try to find out, like, is there, like, a personal message? And, you know, you've already discussed it, but I didn't know if there's, like, things that happen in your life that, like, oh, like, this is so-and-so, and this is so-and-so, and this is, like, a love song between me and this person.
I think it could, and it probably has, but I don't have an example.
But it's
of
like
that
you paint.
It's just as much up to the consumer, painting, right? As the
I think he's hitting the nail on the head that I think, you know, any art form, if people can see themselves in it, they're going to be more drawn to it. And I think if painting, just from a viewing standpoint, you want people to say, this speaks to me and why, you know, because one of my big thousands of reasons I love David Lynch, I mean, he's big on his films, paintings too, I'm sure. He's a fantastic fantastic painter. That's why I went to L.A. last time, just to see his show. Anyway, but his films, he always says, you know, I want people to come up with their own conclusions, and I'm not about to ever tell them my thoughts on it, because their idea, I mean, he said, I'll never tell you what Eraserhead's about, because mm-hmm. your idea is probably better than mine, but it's also more personal. And I'm a big fan of that. And in film, that's something I wanted to explore. I mean, the thing we're working on now, and I'm writing, I'm keeping it somewhat abstract, because it's like there is a story, and I think it'll be somewhat clear, but I like the idea of kind of visually telling something that people, one person will walk away feeling this way and do that, instead of it being just a simple linear thing.
Yeah, it's supposed to tap into the person.
And I get, I'm also a gigantic film, a fan of seeing films that are very linear. The person wakes up and this thing happens, and you don't have to read into it. It's all right there. I mean, I'm a big fan of that too, if it's done well, but I'm also a huge fan of people going, I think that they meant, you know, I like the interpretation of art. And he's exactly right, I think, on a painting like that. You know, I'd much rather somebody see themselves in something than me saying, oh, it was me when I was six, and I had a crush on a girl, that, which is great too.
Yeah.
I just never do it.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, as you're saying it, it's funny because no one's ever asked me before. Part of me is like, maybe I should try to address some personal things. Well, it never just, crosses my mind.
I mean, you know, painting with Bernardo and stuff, like, we always have these conversations about just, you know, like, what are you trying to say? Or, like, what does this mean? Or, like, how is this going to, you know, how's the audience or the viewer going to, like, respond to it? And, you know, more and more, like, now that we're out of school, like, I paint just for me now. So I just paint to paint. Like, I don't have to have an artist statement. I don't have to have anything. But I feel like sometimes it's a good thing to, like, you know, kind of step back and, like...
Well, I always get in trouble because I've always publicly said I think art school can destroy artists. And I've known people who got pissed off at me for saying that. But I've known artists that after they get out of, like, grad school, they're kind of... fucking tweaky because they've had
they're burned out.
Well, they're not only burned out, but they have to be ready to explain everything and why they made those decisions. And I've had the discussions. I'm like, dude, you know, Jesus. You can tell that they're like, but what if? And it's just, they have to deprogram. I'm not saying it's always that way by any means, but I've never had to go through that. You know, every art I've ever made was for me. I mean, I'm self-taught mostly. And I'm not saying it's a good thing, but I've never had to explain it to anybody. So you can flounder in obscurity as long as you want, but I don't have anybody walk in and go, what the fuck is that supposed to mean? So
I'm that kind of artist, the one you just described, the one that has to know everything. Yeah.
But see, you know, but and this is where it's terrible. I've never been there, so I'm sure the people that are in your situation can say, fuck you, you don't know what you're talking about. Because if I was in your thing, I might go, God, maybe I need to be torn down a little bit and built back up.
I think it's
a good thing. Like, to,
it depends on who the on the person.
Yeah.
Who's doing it and who's having it done to them.
I think it's just person to person. My family hates watching movies with me because I can't stop talking about motifs and specific imagery, like, in movies. It's just,
plus you talk.
I do the same thing.
I do. I have to shut up. Right. And even I don't know. And even watching, like, Making a Murderer, I was constantly like, what about the? They're not even talking about the other. It's, I don't know. I was
watching.
I was looking at, and like, that was a weird angle.
They're this not, is
the B-roll was bad there because you don't even know what he was saying.
I was watching Sunny in Philadelphia with a friend. And I kept saying, like, they had a, you know, track shot, and they were going, and they went into the dark of the doorway, and you knew they cut to another shot. And I was like, they cut to another shot. Why am I saying this? Like, anybody cares? Like, thank you. Because
I find myself saying that's a nice shot.
It gets you excited. Like, that's for me, that's art. Like, when I see, like, you know, a piece that just, you know, the whole, like, this means that, like, that shit gets me excited, and like, it just does. That's, I mean, it's the same thing.
First time I went to the MoMA, I was in New York, and my cousin lived there at the time, and he'd been there a thousand times because he was taking everybody. So I was going, and he was like, I'll be on the third floor getting drunk. Have fun. And I was like, great. So I got to, and I had a friend that I met who met me there, but, you know, I got to just take it in as long as I wanted. Because the last thing I wanted him to do is go, you know, I want to sit there and geek out on whatever.
Yeah, geek out. So, they're like puzzles.
Yeah, exactly. Especially at MoMA. Arts, Lord. Yeah, I could have.
So when we wrap up our episodes, typically we try to get a mission statement or some sort of
mantra.
Yeah, a mantra that would wrap you up as a person.
In just a few sentences.
Spontaneously right now, in a little paragraph,
It says who I am is
a paragraph.
Jesus. Which is it?
Yeah. A few sentences is a paragraph.
Yeah, just like a few sentences that
like
do
your
what?
Like your motto, like your personal motto, mantra. Like right now, you're 48 years old. Artist in Wichita, Kansas. It's like, what wraps you up?
Well, I will. I always use create or die because, which is overly corny, and I know that, but don't know. I always feel like to be an artist, it's just the,
it's to the point.
You just gotta keep working, man. Awesome. If you don't, you know. I remember when I was in my 20s, if I stopped long enough, I got really depressed. So if I keep working, I always endorphins kick in or something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, create or die.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much, Wade Hampton.
Thanks, Wade. Thank you, guys.
It was a pleasure, Wade Hampton.
Perfect. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Yeah.
Nope. Nothing. Don't buy David Bowie.
Wait.
I have so much guilt. Yeah. Wait a year, and then I'm so bad.
But not on the anniversary.
Oh, shit. All right. Why did I ever throw
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, guys.
And I'll grab a group photo of you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Digest that.
Thank you, Wade Hampton, for sitting down and talking with us. Thank you again to our sponsors of this week's episode, Hellbomb Tattoo, College Hill, Deli, and Catering. Big thank you to Domestic Drone for supplying the intro and outro music. And most of all, thank you, the listener, for tuning in every week. Catch us next week on Midwest Digest.